Tape 5 of The Inner Art of Meditation. We rejoin the fourth class on Working with the Mind with Jack Kornfield.
What I'd like to talk about tonight is something that's at the heart of meditation or spiritual practice. The central quality or central capacity that we have as human beings to see clearly, to awaken. The word Buddha or Bodhi from which it comes, that means to be awake, to be awakened. And that quality, the awakened heart and mind, is a quality that we can nurture or develop or cultivate in our life, and it's the quality of awareness or mindfulness. Gurdjieff called it self-remembering. Krishnamurti called it bare attention. The attention to what's actually here in our life, rather than all our thoughts and fantasies and hopes and desires, to really come into the present and relate to life as it is for us. This quality is a receptive quality. It's a real listening inwardly with our spirit, with our heart. But it's also active in that while you're receptive, you need to be present. And the active part is to really pay attention. Let me talk about it some because it's so important in meditation. And maybe as I do, you'll get a better sense of what it means to be mindful or to listen. The quality of attention or listening is not certain things that we confuse it with. One of the things that it's not is the fulfilling of some program from the past. We sit down and often we get into what could be called project meditation. Well, there's tension here. If I do it right, I can get that to go away. And then this comes up. I need to resolve that question or finish that unfinished business or so forth. And we carry our ideas of the past with us. It's like that famous Zen story of the two monks who come to a raging stream and they see this beautiful young maiden standing on the side with a silk kimono, obviously unable to cross without getting all wet and muddy. And one of the monks picks her up in his arms and carries her across and puts her down. And they continue on their way, silently walking to a far temple. Later that afternoon, many hours later, the second monk says to the first, "How could you do that? How could you pick her up? We monks aren't even supposed to look at such beautiful young girls, much less pick them up in our arms and carry them." And the first monk turns to the second and says, "I put her down back by the stream. Are you still carrying her?" And we do that a lot. It's gone. It's done. Finito. The past, you can do nothing about it. And it's true that we have some business sometimes that's unfinished, some grief or some unexpressed love or things like that. But to be aware is not to drag the past into the present, to try and shape it by our ideas from the past, but rather to let go of the past and the future and to come and see things as they are now. Now, what listening is, beside it's that it's not the past, not bringing things from the past into the present, it's also not judgment. This gets kind of subtle. You can sit here, for example, and close your eyes and be meditating. All of a sudden you hear a click over there. The door opens and someone walks in and you note hearing, because we want to start including sound, just like we've included sensations and breath. Gee, that person's coming in late. I wish they wouldn't come in the middle of meditation. Oh yeah, I'm not supposed to be thinking. Back to the breath, in and out, and you're aware of the breath for a little bit. Then your knee starts to hurt. Oh, now my knee's starting to hurt. I hope it doesn't get worse during this. I mean, we're just near the beginning. Oh well, I'll pay attention to it. Pain, pain. Maybe I should move. Yeah, nobody's noticing. I'll do a little quietly, a little movement. Oh, that's much better. Now back to the breath. In and out, in and out. Hey, I'm doing really well with this. Yeah, that's really terrific. Then somebody makes noise. Or I wish everybody would just be quiet. I'm really getting the hang of it. And don't disturb me. Hearing. Oh, right. I shouldn't be thinking. Forget that. Back to the breath again. And then I'd say, all right, how was your meditation for that time? say, well, were you aware? Yeah, I heard somebody come in the door. I was aware of the pain in my knee. I heard somebody sniffle. I was aware of the breath. And that was true. You were aware of all those things. Plus which, each time you had an evaluation. They shouldn't come in. I don't like this pain. I'm doing really good on the breath. That is to say, a judgment of what's good and what's bad. You were aware and you added to it. We do this all the time, our evaluation of it. So that's called judging, which is different than mindfulness. Can you hear the difference? What to do with those judgments? Well, tonight we're going to start working directly with thought. And one thing you can do is just note, oh, judging when it arises. You're doing really good. Judging. You're doing terrible. Judging. Thank you for your opinion. Just go back to the breath. Another way you can relate to it, in addition to just being mindful of it, because if you say, I shouldn't be judging, I should stop that, what is that? It's another judgment. You never get out. It just chases its tail. So you say, there's another judgment. Hey, you did that good. Thank you. Judging. Right back to the breath. The other thing that you can do, which was suggested by Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh, is to sit with a half smile. Just put a little bit of a smile on your lips, the way the Buddha statues that you might have seen in certain places have. Not a big toothy grin or anything, but just enough of a smile so that you'll find somehow that your body affects your heart and your mind, and that smile often gives you a sense of a certain ease or peace, even though your mind will do all kinds of things. I mean, it will go anywhere and it will tell any kind of story, and it has no pride, as I said last week. It will do things. But with that smile, you can kind of receive it without so much judgment. So attention isn't programmed from the past. It isn't judgment. Here's something even more subtle. To be attentive or mindful is not to become quiet or concentrated. Sometimes you can sit and you can be concentrated on your breath and you start to get peaceful and quiet and you're kind of there with your breath, only kind of, and the breath's going in and out and you feel it a little bit, and mostly what you are is peaceful and dull. So you're there, there's a certain degree of concentration, your mind isn't wandering too much, and you're somewhat tranquil. But you don't really feel the beginning or the end of the breath. You're not aware when sensations do arise in the body. You're not aware that you're feeling peaceful. What you are is kind of like a cow out in the pasture, munching food, and not really so conscious. Okay? That is called being peaceful. Or it's called being concentrated. Sometimes you get very concentrated, but you're not really awake. On the other hand, the opposite, you could sit sometime and have a lot of thoughts or be planning a great deal or have a lot of fear, some of the kinds of things that people brought up, and be very present with it. Note fear or planning or thinking, and even though you're not so peaceful or concentrated, you're really present with it. And that's the quality of mindfulness. It's not judging and it's not making yourself peaceful. It's something radically different from what we do most of the time. Most of the time we're involved in evaluating and trying to make things a certain way. And to be aware or awake or mindful is to listen to what actually is without trying to change it at all for a moment. Do you think you could do that? To just be with things exactly as they are without trying to make them different? That's the art of meditation. And if we want to discover the deepest spiritual questions, who are we? What is our true nature? How does the mind work? What is the nature of desire or fear or love? You don't get those answers from thinking or planning or trying to figure or making. The deepest questions become answered in the silence, in the listening itself. When the heart and the mind is silent, is tranquil, is listening without trying to make things any way different than they are, there's a kind of opening or renewal. And then we can see what is true about life. And it is that truth, that seeing, that vision that brings us freedom. And not anything else but that. So to be aware or be mindful is to see or sense or feel what is present with a kind of balance that neither rejects it nor grasps it. Without fear, and I don't mean that fear won't arise, but allowing the fear to be there is just another thing as well. Just being with what's here. It's to see what's present. It has two parts to it, to notice what's present. And then there's a second part to this attention, is to see what happens to it. So that if a feeling, happiness or joy or sadness or grief or itching or tingling or whatever happens to arise, you have two jobs in your awareness. The first is to notice what's present. You can name it happy, happy, or joy, joy, or rapture, or sorrow, sorrow, or anger, or itching, or hot, or cold, cold. So the first thing is just to acknowledge this is what's here. Then the second is to see what happens as you pay attention to it. You feel the cold, or hot, or anger, or happy, or sad, and you note angry, angry, and you see what happens, like you did with your fear while you were driving, and what happens. If you begin to listen deeply without trying to change things in any way, their deeper truth will start to speak. And what you see almost inevitably as you look is that wherever you listen, it changes. It's there for a few seconds or part of a minute, and then guess what happens? It dissolves and some new state or new thought or new sensation appears. Whatever you see will teach you other things. It will teach you that it cannot be grasped, that no matter how much you want to control body and heart and mind, since things don't last, you can't really control it. And so you have to find some other kind of understanding, which Alan Watts called the wisdom of insecurity, not of holding it, but really of releasing things. If you listen, you also discover that life is played out in duality, that there's hot and cold and sweet and sour and pleasure and pain. And instead of fighting this fact, you start to really feel it in your bones, in your marrow, in the midst of your life. And so you can make some peace with it. So listening is to see what's actually here, and then see its process, see what the nature of our life is. And in that, listening to the body, the heart, the spirit, the mind, all the spiritual questions that you might ever have begin to be answered. How to live wisely, what it means to love, what desire is, what fear is, because you feel it, you see how it operates. Now, to listen in this way requires several things from us. The first thing it requires is a kind of humility. And the humility isn't that, oh, I'm a humble person, I'm now a spiritual person and I'm humble. That's just another kind of self-image, like Nasruddin looking in the mirror with some other idea. Humility is recognizing how little we know in a very deep way. I was with a friend who died this week. I was actually with him a bit after he died, so I was just with his body. He died of AIDS. And there was his body, and he was really a good buddy and a loving fellow. And it was clearly not him anymore. I mean, it was sort of yellow, and it was very cold to touch it, kind of clammy. And all the spirit and life that was this person was nothing to do with that body. But it was so strange, because the day before, there he was, talking to people. And then, what is that? Anybody got an idea what that is? You know. Or how about love? We are all so much wanting love. But what is love? Or what is consciousness? What does it mean to be aware? Or where did the earth come from? All these things, these big round balls of rock with a little bit of water on the surface, or of gases, or of fire, these huge fireballs that hang in the middle of space. Where did those come from? Anybody got an idea? I mean, the real basic questions, human life. So humility It's also called beginner's mind. It's seeing that in many ways we know so little. We're just beginners. There's a story of an old Hasidic rabbi who every morning walks across the town square to the temple to pray. And one morning, he's walking across the town square to go to the temple, and he runs into the police chief, this old Cossack, who says, "Good morning, Rebbe, where are you going?" And the rabbi says, "I don't know." And he says, "You don't know," and grabs him by the arm. "What do you mean? For 25 years, every morning you walk across this square, this direction, and go to the temple to pray. Don't give me that kind of lip." And he grabs him and he drags him across the square to the police station. And he's just about to push him in the jail cell, and the rabbi turns around and he says, "You see, you don't know." And the truth is that we don't know. And we have some odds, maybe, that tomorrow will be a certain way. But some days you're going to be really surprised. It's not going to be just what you think. And so the first thing that's needed in this meditative process is to listen with that sense of humility. I don't know. Let me see what desire is about, or what contentment, or what fear, or what the movement of mind or thought. Let me begin to listen. Now, the second thing that's necessary to listen is a sense of stillness. Kabir, the Indian poet, says, "I don't know what kind of a God we've been talking about. The caller chants in a loud voice at dusk. Does he think that God is deaf? Don't you know God hears the ringing of the anklets on the feet of an insect as it walks?" I think I told you this poem the first week. But it's that kind of listening. It's not so much the listening of being peaceful all the time. Has anybody found that in meditation yet? But it's the listening of a kind of stillness I would call a receptivity, so that you listen to the feet of the insects, or you feel when the breath is soft and when it's long and when it's short, and when the body contracts and when it releases. And when you're listening to desire, is there pain in that, or is it pleasant? Or when you become aware of not having desire in the mind, when you're not wanting, what is that quality like? To really listen to deep things inside, the kind of stillness. And then the third thing that's necessary to listen in a deep way is a real openness, or I would call it a tenderness of one's heart as well. This is from a woman, a friend of mine who died of cancer, and she went through a whole long saga trying to heal herself. She said, "I had long periods at first, after learning I had cancer, when I felt incredibly shaky, crying a lot, agitated, close to falling apart, dwelling on fears of pain and thoughts of death. And then unbidden would come thoughts of others who are suffering on this planet at this moment. Of all who have suffered in the past through loss or difficulty or pain, and I would immediately feel a wave of peace and calm pass through me. I no longer felt alone. I no longer felt singled out. Instead, I felt an incredible connection with all these people, like we were part of the same huge family that shared our joys and shared our sorrows." But to be able to listen means that our heart has to be willing to feel the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, both of them. And it's sometimes when we're sitting, and the thing that's the hardest for us, our restlessness, or our boredom, or our loneliness, or the grief that we've run away from for lots of years, or the desire that we never really let ourselves feel, or those things, or our separateness, or our longing comes, and we feel that and we say, no, I'll meditate on anything but this. I just don't want to feel this. And we spend our whole life running from that. In that moment when we say, I can't stand it, I'll just sit and feel my despair, or my loss, or my fear, or grief. In those moments when we face our shadow that we've tried to put behind us, meditation really deepens. That's the place where you learn the power of the heart and the power of awareness. Gandhi talked about that as the source of compassion, that we need to learn to love the most difficult parts of ourselves if we're going to love anything else in the world. It means also listening as we do to hear the truth of the seasons of life. Everything which is created, everything which has the nature to arise, passes away. If you could just get that one thing really deeply, that's all you need. Everything that arises passes. Every beautiful and terrible and amazing and magnificent form that comes in this dance of light and shadow is here for a while and passes. Nothing is permanent. And to hear or to listen inside is to get a sense of the seasons of spring and summer and fall and winter, of birth and death, of joy and sorrow, and see that they are natural. That death is supposed to follow birth, just like winter is supposed to follow fall and spring follows winter. It's Easter season. That's really the meaning of Easter, is death and rebirth and renewal. To sit and listen in this way, to accept and to feel, is what develops a quality the Buddha called the heart of greatness. And when you look at, you know, if there's anyone that does inspire you from spiritual traditions, whether it's Gandhi or the Buddha or Jesus or Mother Mary or Ramana Maharshi or whoever it happens to be, if you look at the pictures or the images, you look at the eyes of those people, it's not so much what they know, but it's really the spirit of their heart that's seen everything and really loved it all, accepted it all. Now, in this acceptance, I don't mean that you can't act. And the talk next week is going to be about how once we've listened, it then becomes necessary to respond. So I'm not saying that we don't respond in life. We constantly do. But the first and the deepest place to find our freedom is to see what's true and make our peace with it, come to terms with it. I read you something, if I may, a passage to end this. From Hermann Hesse's book, Siddhartha, remember from high school? This is the end of the book. Siddhartha listened. He was now listening intently, completely absorbed, quite empty, taking in everything. He felt that he had now completely learned the art of listening. He'd often heard all this before, all these numerous voices in the river. But today they sounded different. He could no longer distinguish the different voices, the merry voice from the weeping voice, the childish voice from the manly voice. They all belonged to each other, the lament of those who yearn, the laughter of the wise, the cry of indignation, the groan of the dying. They were all interwoven and interlocked, entwined in a thousand ways. And all the voices, all the goals, all the yearnings, all the sorrows, all the pleasures, all the good and evil, all of them was the world. All of them together was the stream of events, the music of life. When Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, to this song of a thousand voices, and did not listen to only the sorrow, or only the laughter, when he did not bind himself to one particular voice, but heard them all, then the whole, the unity, the great song consisted of harmony. And from that hour, Siddhartha ceased to fight against his destiny. There shone in his face the serenity of knowledge of one who is no longer confronted with conflict of desire, who has found salvation, who is in harmony with the stream of events, full of sympathy and compassion, surrendering themselves to the stream, belonging to the unity of all things. And that's that quality of listening, For too long in our lives and our culture, we have run away from ourselves and run away from listening to the earth, to the needs of the oceans and the trees and the ecology and the children and the old people and what really fulfills our life. And to meditate in some deep way is to reopen that capacity to listen. Now, I'd like to do a little exercise, if we could, for a moment, as we're about to expand the field of meditation yet further. So this exercise will be as follows. For 3 minutes, when we begin, I'd like you to close your eyes and count your thoughts. Okay, we work with breath and body and feelings and so forth. So when we begin in a minute, you will close your eyes and wait with your mind open like a movie screen or like a sky. And you sit like the cat at the mouse hole and count the thoughts when they come. Now, a few things that may help you. Thoughts can come in a couple of forms. Sometimes you get picture thoughts. Sometimes you'll have word thoughts. Sometimes you get the audio-visual portion together. Thoughts are your associations to things. If you feel an itch or you hear the sound of the rain or there's a pain in your knee, those are direct sensations. That's just an itch or sound or pain. But if as soon as the pain comes in, you think, I wonder how much longer it will be that this will last, or you hear the rain and you think, gee, I wonder if it's going to rain tomorrow too. Or you feel the itch and say, huh, I didn't think there were any mosquitoes in here. I wonder what's making this itch. That's the thought part. You understand the difference? The direct sensation and then the thought. Now, they're tricky. Sometimes when you watch for them, they won't come out for a little bit. But you hang out there and they'll show themselves. Or they get very quiet. You wait and all of a sudden the thought will say, gee, it's getting really quiet in here, isn't it? You go, okay, 16, gotcha. Or they sneak up from behind and pretend they're not a thought. They'll say things like, there haven't been many thoughts yet, have there? You go, all right, got 17. We tend to identify so directly with all of these things. And so this is a beginning exercise in listening to this inner stream. So now let your eyes close for a moment. Sit comfortably. In just 3 minutes, don't count the numbers. I know they're a thought. Okay, let yourself come back. first numbers, how many thoughts did people count? 4? 13, 6? 20? 15? 30? See, some people just have short thoughts, lots of them. Others have a few really long ones. Now, were they mostly pictures or words? Words for many, pictures for some. Both. What you begin to do when you do this exercise is simply learn about your own style of thinking. Some people have almost all pictures and very little words. Some others will have both pictures and words sometimes synchronized together, but sometimes the pictures will be more memories or dream pictures or other things, and the words will be planning. They'll serve different functions. Some people have almost all words and very rarely pictures. You can be aware of thought before it arises. There's a sort of pre-thought. It's almost like you're about to burp. There's this mental... It's true, there's this kind of sensation in there when you're really listening. Now, what you begin to see in this very simple exercise is that it's possible not only to become aware of the breath or the body sensations or sounds, hearing, we can include those now, but to become aware as well of this inner stream of images and pictures and words that for the most part is quite unexamined. Now, I don't mean to say that you're going to be watching your thoughts like we just did or counting them all the time. That would probably drive you crazy if you're not already. But it becomes useful to understand this process and see how it runs our life and it affects us. Because most people go around all the time and don't know that series of pictures and words and things are going on in there. And yet they create much of our world. The whole city of San Francisco was built out of that. Somebody said, let's put a building over there. Let's move the roads over there. They had a picture or a thought about it. And then they built that road and the building. And gradually, everybody's thoughts got translated into action. And pretty soon, there was a big city. And much of our life comes out of the movement that responds to thought. When you begin to know how the mind works, then instead of being its servant, which we are mostly, it runs us, it becomes something that you can use rather than be lost. So one of the key insights that you can begin to get in meditation is simply the nature of how your own mind is operating. And in that, see that there are possibilities of how you relate to it. One possibility is that we take it very seriously and believe all its thoughts and moods and so forth. And that leads to a certain kind of life. Generally speaking, it leads to a lot of complexity and suffering. And another is to listen from someplace in our heart that isn't the mind, but which listens with a greater sense of spaciousness or wisdom or understanding, and then responds to things rather than being caught up in all. So we'll begin to include thought. Let's do a bit more sitting, but do you want to stretch first? Why don't you stand up just for 30 seconds or so? And when you've stretched or feel ready to, let yourself sit back down. We'll just sit for about 10 minutes this time. Again, we're following what's called the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four major areas of awareness that we can develop. First, working with breath and body, and then the heart and feelings, and now working with the thoughts and the movement of mind directly. So in this sitting, again, you find a posture where you can sit comfortably and erect. And when we begin, you'll go back to your breath again, using that as the center of the meditation. And really listening to it, see if you can feel its beginning, or its middle, or its end, or what the sensations are like tonight. Is it short, or long, or soft? As you pay attention to the breath, if body sensations, or sounds, or moods become quite strong, drop the breath and name them, giving them the same mindful attention you gave to the breath. In addition now, we'll include the field of thought. So as you follow the breath, if thinking arises, and it's quite strong, it kind of entangles you or you get off in it, And it can be a series of pictures or words. It can be memory or planning. Then name the thinking. You can just say thinking, thinking, or you might note planning, planning, or remembering, remembering, very simply. Usually when you become aware of it, it will dissolve. Your awareness is like sunlight on the fog. The thought very often will dissolve, and then you notice it dissolve and go back to the breath. If it's a very charged or strong thought, you may note thinking, thinking, and it may continue. If that's so, then you can keep noting it softly, remembering, remembering, or thinking, 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 while it's present until it does go away, until it dissolves when it will, and then you go back to the breath. So keep it simple, using the breath as the center. And if it feels complicated or too full of objects, stay mostly with the breath. But when something is strong, sensations, moods, or thoughts, and it kind of pulls you into it, name it and you recognize it. Be aware of it, notice as it dissolves when it does, and then return back to the breath. Notice the breath with a listening attention, a careful feeling this breath. Or else name and be aware of whatever else is strong in this moment. be aware of just what is present without trying to change it. Noticing with a gentle, careful attention.
This concludes side A. Please turn the tape over for side B.